morning, everyone. Today's Daf Mamasil is Daf Tzadi. Thank the Lupin Foundation for sponsorship of the Daf Daf is on the Sechon Ishmas Lubi Gabriela Bashmuel. Pei Testament Base, we are in the towards the top of Pei Testament Base. And a continuation of yesterday's Gemara. We are discussing the heterim of the allowance of a worker to eat on the field. It is a Torah given right that the worker, when working on the field, is allowed to eat and consume the fruit that he's working with, or any of the anything that grows from the ground. Yesterday we discussed, the Gemara told us again that this heter is only for things that grow out of the ground. If the worker is working with any other food, he's milking a cow, he's making cheese, so that he's not allowed to eat. We talked about the parameters in terms of when he can eat it. He can eat it only from the point where he's doing the gemar malacha, only when he's doing the end work of the product, meaning he has to be involved in talisha. If he's just hoeing the property, if he's just weeding the property, so then he's not allowed to eat it. Even if what he's weeding is, let's say, little fruits and vegetables. Yesterday the gemar had the discussion of little onions. So he's but the only purpose he's removing is for weeding. He's not allowed to eat that. He has to be at the point of being talish. He has to be removing them. These are all the things that we discussed over the course of yesterday. Once the peiros have gotten to the point where they're chayv and shumas ha-maisros, so now they're tevel, and then the worker, of course, is not allowed to eat them. And this, too, we discussed also in yesterday's daf. We're continuing now in the Gemara. We are tashma. We are ready to come and hear another proof for the following question we asked yesterday. We know that we also discussed this a couple days ago in the daf, that you can't put condiments on the food. And Rashi explained the reason why you can't put condiments on the food is because he's going to want to eat even more. And even though the Torah gives you a heter to eat the fruit, but au naturel, you have to eat it in its organic state. But once you add condiments, so it's going to help you eat more. We know about this here in America. We have these things called condiments. It makes the food even better. We tend to eat more of it. Okay, but now I'm off the pedestal and off the soapbox and back to the Gemara. So you can't add condiments to the you can't add salt or any other type of condiments. That we know. Gemara wanted to know, what about roasting it? Just simply roasting the fruit, making them a little bit sweeter, and then eating them. So the Gemara's question, that was the Gemara's question. The Gemara now is going to try to resolve this question once again. Tashma, the Gemara says, come in here. This is where we left off yesterday. It's about a quarter of the way down in the Gemara. First word in the Gemara in the line is Ika Iefshe Delamamtik Porta. Remember yesterday we talked about taking the fruit and hitting them against the rocks in order to sweeten them. The Gemara says that sweetens them a little bit. Tashma, the Gemara says, coming here the following. Po'alim shayu ojim b'teinim. If you have workers and they are in the field and they are owed there, they're hoeing. The gojim b'tamarim, or, again, same basic idea, they're doing that with dates. The bojim b'anavim, or they are doing the same thing with grapes. Moskim b'zeitzim, doing the same thing by the olives. I said hoeing, by the way. That's incorrect. They were not hoeing. They were actually plucking it off the ground. So hare elu ochlim. So then you're allowed to eat them upotrim. I'm sorry, upaturim. And they're going to be exempt from Chumas HaMaisra Shatar Zechzalem because the Torah gives them the right to eat that. In other words, Rashi points out over here, you have to understand, we discussed this also a couple days ago. When you sell produce, that's Koveya. That's going to be a Kvias. That will establish it, and it'll be Chayv and Chumas HaMaisra. We also pointed out a couple days ago, this is a Din Darabanan, this is not a Din Torah, but still. When you sell fruit, so midrabanan, now it is kavua. It's now been established. It's been fixed, and therefore it's chayv and shumas ha-maisros. So what the Bryce over here is telling us is the following: when the worker goes ahead and he takes the fruit, it's not in exchange for his work. Don't look at it that way. If it were in exchange for his work, so that's a purchase, and therefore it's chayv and shumas ha-maisros, and then you can't eat it. The Gemara is saying, don't look. The Bryce is saying, don't look at it that way. The fact that he's eating, that's a Torah given right. The Torah allows them to eat. So as a result of that, it's not going to be chayv and shumas ha-maisros. Rashi says that's exactly the pshat on the braisa. Upaturim, I'm reading Rashi. Upaturim and ha-maisa v'lo amar mekachu. We don't say it's a sale. Lefisha ain't it tonight's charam. This has nothing to do with the negotiation of labor. Ela ha-Torah zichsalam. It's that the Torah allows them to eat it. Okay. So in these cases, says the braisa, it is perfectly within the right of the worker to go ahead and to take and to eat. Continuing in the braisa. Yeah, I know. I just lost my spot. Upturin shatar zichzalem bepitam. However, in conjunction with your bread, lo yochlam. So lo yochlu ela imke nadlu rishos mi balabais. But when it comes to eating it together with bread, in coordination with bread, you're not allowed to do that. So What's going to end up happening is that, again, as a condiment towards your bread, you're going to end up eating more, and that you're not allowed to do. So, and you're only allowed to do this if you received express permission from the Baal Bais. And you cannot salt it and eat them together with salt. So the Gemara now is saying, or trying to deduce from the Braisa, that it's got to be the same thing is true with roasting as well. But the Gemara notes the obvious difference. Melech vadeh kanavim v'davar achar dami. The Gemara says, we're talking about salting. Salting is an additive. It's a condiment. You're adding something to it. That's not our discussion. Our discussion is roasting it with adding nothing to it. So, okay, so the Gemara says, we really don't know. Okay, so at this point in time, we ask the question of whether or not you're allowed to roast the fruit and eat it. The Gemara tried to bring a couple of proofs, but the Gemara now has pretty much left this topic alone. There's no conclusive proof whether the worker is allowed to roast the fruit or not allowed to roast the fruit. Now, in the Braisa we just learned together, it says that you're not allowed to salt it and eat it while having it salted. Uriminu, the Gemara now points out, I'm going to ask you a question from the following Braisa. This Braisa will seem to indicate otherwise. Okay, now I'll say what I said before, but now I'll say correctly. Here now, in this Braisa, we're talking about the worker who is just working the field, right? He's asked to weed the field, or there are some holes in the field, and the holes need patching up. He's working the property. He's not there to pick the fruit off the tree. So he has absolutely no right to eat the fruit, because we're not at the point of the Gemara Malacha, and so therefore he has no right to eat the fruit, like we've said already a number of times. However, if he was hired in order to pick the fruit off the tree, now he has the right to eat it. And again, the Braisa over here made the same point that we made in the previous Braisa. This is not an exchange for his work. This is the Torah given right. Therefore, it's not going to be chayv and chumas and maestros. And therefore, he's allowed to eat it. Katsats. Now, what if it was kotsets? Now, as prepared for in preparing the daf, I'm like, I don't understand. If that's what he's there to do, he's there to cut it. Like, I didn't follow what was going on in the Braisa. The Braisa was describing cutting it. That's what he's doing. So then Rashi points out, Tosfos points out over here, katsats over here means make a deal. Right? He cut a deal. I'm like, oh, now I understand the Braisa. So katsats achas ve'achas yochal shtaim shtaim lo yochal. So, if he makes a deal with the Baal HaBayis, so then he can eat it one at a time, but shaim shaim lo yocha, but he cannot eat it two at a time. Now, what kind of deal is he cutting with the Baal HaBayis? So that's a little bit difficult to understand. I'm going to read Rashi. In other words, let me. Thank you. Right, I was going to say, let me outline the question. If the Torah gives him the right to go ahead and to eat the fruit off the field, so what is he cutting a deal with the owner for about eating the fruit in the field? So Rashi writes, and I'll read the Rashi. Katzatz v'hisnim balabayis amanasha ochel havale ke'ein mekach. So Rashi just simply says that, well, he's cutting a deal with the owner, so now, since he's cutting a deal with the owner, so now it's going to be treated like a mekach. It is a difficult Rashi. Let's point it out. Meaning, why would you need to cut a deal? It sounds like poor negotiation. That you're cutting a deal with the owner, I'd like to eat the fruit in your field. Oh yeah, I know the Torah allows me to do it, but let's cut a deal anyway. And let's also point out, by the way, that by negotiating now the deal, it actually puts you in a poor position. Because previously you were allowed to eat the fruit in the field. Now that you cut a deal, you can only eat one at a time, but you can't eat two. Because once you're taking two, now it's considered like a mekach, and therefore you're not allowed to eat it. So you basically negotiated your way down. And why would you do that? That's strange. Now, it's so strange that I was thinking to myself when preparing, like, it's hard to understand. Okay, so I'm in really good company. Tosfos over here points out that's really difficult to understand. So, Perish Bekuntris, first Tosfos on the Amud. First, full Tosfos on the Amud. Divrei HaMaskil Kotzi. Tosfos writes, Perish Bekuntris, Katzin Simbala Baisam and Ashi Yochel, the Hasha Avikein Mekach. So Tosfos quotes the Rashi, and that is, he cuts a deal with the owner that allows him to eat it, but now that he cut a deal, so now it's more like an exchange. It's more like a purchase. Vinir le Rabbeinatam de la Perish Kaya Resha. Ascharo la Ador. Oh, this makes much more sense. Rabbeinatam says, You know what this is talking about? It's talking about where he was negotiating as a worker, not when he was working to prune the field and to cut the fruit off the field, but rather it's going on the first part of the Braisa, where he was only working the field, hoeing the field, covering holes in the field. So there, he had no right menatorah to eat. Now he's cutting a deal with the owner of the field. Oh, I was like, oh, that makes much more sense. So the Iyas Charaliksor, and Rabbi Natan asked the question that we asked. Because if we're talking about where he's cutting a deal, where in harvesting, Lama Yisna Bechinam. Why would you negotiate when there's nothing to negotiate? You're negotiating for roten for no reason. You're allowed to eat a minotaur. It doesn't make sense you'd be negotiating in such a scenario. And if you're negotiating for no reason, so then what difference should it make if you're taking one, if you're taking two, if the Torah gives you the right to eat it, so you should be able to eat it. And I can't imagine, says Rabbi Natan, the negotiation is going to put you in a poor position, a worse position than prior to negotiation. Okay, so obviously there's a mitzvah to defend Rashi, and you have to explain Rashi. But just kipshuto, as a simple pshat of the Gemara works, Tosfos Rabbeinu Tam makes a lot of sense over here, that the case of negotiation here in the Brisa is going on when you're not harvesting the field, but you're just simply working the field. And then as part of a labor negotiation, you cut a deal with the owner, you know what, let me eat. Okay, good. Now it makes a lot more sense. So, going back to the Brisa now. So if you negotiate, so achas yochel shtayim shtayim lo yochel. So you can eat one at a time, but you can't eat two at a time. And again, the reason why is we have just discussed. When you can go with Rashi or Tosfos as pshat. Either way, once you're negotiating, so then the eating is going to be in exchange for labor because you negotiated it, and therefore, once you're eating two at a time, it looks too much like a mekach, and therefore you are violating. You're eating tevel. And then the Brisa points out that you can salt and knead it. Now this is the part of the Brisa which is why the Gemara quotes the Brisa. Previously we said you're not allowed to salt and eat. Salting and kneading is no good. You have to eat the fruit organically, naturally, no condiment. And okay, well, we'll get to that. So the Gemara says, so Yosofis b'melach v'yochel, so you're allowed to salt the fruit and you're allowed to eat it. Ad kan divrei ha-braisa. So obviously we have a stira between braisa number one and braisa number two. But before we resolve the stira, let's just be a little bit clearer, more articulate about what that braisa is talking about when saying that you're allowed to salt. Ahaya. The Gemara says, in which case are we talking about here in the braisa? So the Gemara says, now, if we're talking about where the eating was as a result of negotiation, so if you're eating as a result of negotiation, so you can negotiate whatever you want. You know, can I eat the food? The owner says yes. Okay, good. Can I salt and knead it? The owner says yes. If it's negotiated, so then of course you're allowed to do it. So then the Brisa says there's no chiddush there whatsoever. If it's a result of negotiation, of course you can salt and eat it. So ala lava ratio, so the Gemara says it's going back on the ratio of the Brisa. We're in the ratio of the Brisa. We're talking about where you are eating it without negotiation, sans negotiation. So under those circumstances, that must be what the Brisa is talking about. Now that we've explained the second Brisa, now the steer is even stronger. Because in the first Brisa, it says that if you're eating it by right of Torah, you can't salt it. In the second Brisa, we're saying if you eat it by right of Torah, you can salt it. Now we have a stira. So Amar Abaye lo kasha kam be'aretz kam b'chutzar. So the first attempted answer of the Gemara by Abaye is that there's a difference between being in Eretz Yisrael and outside of Eretz Yisrael. Be'aretz kavai svisa. So in Eretz Yisrael, you have this idea of being koveya. Again, this is an idea that we keep coming back to and again in these Gemaras. And that is that when you do something that establishes the fruit, even though min haTorah it's not chayv in Trumas HaMaisros, but the Chachamim said you have to take off Trumas HaMaisros, it now becomes Tevel. There are six different koveyas, six things that will establish it. Shabbos, as we keep pointing out, is one of the six examples. Shabbos, every eating you do becomes significant. Therefore, if you take fruit on Shabbos, even though the fruit was not brought into the house, even though it was not brought into the courtyard, but once you eat on Shabbos, that's a koveya. Salting is a koveya. It makes it significant. It makes the food significant. So the Gemara now is saying that in Eretz Yisrael, so you cannot salt it because now it's koveya. It sets it up for Trumas HaMaisros, and then you can't eat it until you take off Trumas HaMaisros, and in Chutz Aretz lo kava sefisa. But outside of Eretz Yisrael, so it's not going to be a koveya. So right now the Gemara says this is the distinction between the two brises. Am Rav Amika Mita Deberetz kava sefisa midaraisa v'chutz aretz lo kava sefisa muta lechatchila. We don't normally have such a wide variation of positions between Eretz Yisrael and Chutz Aretz. Meaning, if in Chutz Aretz there is a din de rabbanan to be noe trumas amaisos, not all of Chutz Aretz, obviously, but if there is a takana of trumas amaisos outside of Eretz Yisrael, it's going to follow, it's going to pattern after Eretz Yisrael. Rashi says that called the takan de rabbanan came to rise the takan. Rabbis institute following patterning after the Torah. So now, that answer is just simply, says Rava, no, it's not tenable. El Amar Rava, so Rava said, so I'll give you a different answer. Look, here's what we're going to say. Both in and outside of Eretz Yisrael, if you're eating one grape at a time, and you salt it, that's not a koveya. If you eat two, so then that would be in fact a koveya. So, that will be a koveya. Now, katsats. Now, if you're negotiating with the owner, bein safas, bein lo safas, achas, achas, ocho, shayim, shayim, lo yocha. You see, once you're negotiating, so now you're not eating because the Torah allows you to eat, you're eating because of negotiation. Well, there, now the concern is it a mekach or is it not a mekach? What's the line of demarcation, whether it is or it isn't a mekach? Numbers. Meaning if you're eating one at a time, it's not treated like a mekach. If you're eating two at a time, it is treated like a mekach. So therefore, there basically are two considerations in terms of when it becomes tevel. One is salting it, and two is mekach, is acquiring it. So if you're eating it by right of Torah, so then the only thing you have to worry about is salting. Because if you're eating by right of Torah, so then it's not an exchange. You're eating it simply because the Torah allows you to eat it. So then your only consideration is whether salting is considered a koveya. If you're eating through negotiation, so now there's a secondary consideration, and that is mekach. So the Gemara says exactly that. So, I'm sorry. Achas, achas, ochas, shayim, shayim, lo yocha. Lo katzatz, velo safas. So let's say you didn't negotiate. So that means that there's no mekach consideration, and you didn't salt. So ochas, shayim, shayim. So then you're allowed to eat two at a time. Safas, achas, achas, ochel, shayim, shayim, lo yochel. Now, if you salt it, you can eat one at a time, but you can't eat two at a time. Why? Because salting will make it significant, but salting will only make it significant only at two at a time. V'apagav the natu rishus mebala bias. The it bel lahu lamaiser. V'kava sfisa v'tarte. So the Gemara says, I'm sorry, v'kava sfisa. And the... I was right the first time. The kava. In other words, and even without negotiation, if you salt it two at a time, so that's going to be a koveya. Svita v'tarte de kava svita menalan. And the Gemara says, and where do we see this? Meaning, where do we find this idea in the Torah? Now, even though we're looking for a pasuk in Nach and Navi to tell us about this idea of salting, so we all understand the idea of something being a koveya, and therefore b'chaim in shumas maisos, that's a din de rabbanan. It's not a din Torah. When are fruit going to be chayvin chumas maisos min haTorah? When you bring it in the house, when you bring it into the courtyard. Over here, we're talking about the dinei derabbanan of koveya. So it's an asmachta, and Rashi says that. These psukim over here is just simply an asmachta. Amar Rav Masla, damakra, ki kavtsam ke'amir gorana. When you're koveits, when you gather them together, then and only then is it going to be a koveya. So therefore, salting only will be a koveya when you salt it in groups. Right? The smallest number of a group is two. So therefore, once you take two and once you salt them, so then it's chayv and trumas and maisos. So therefore, we have now resolved the distinction between b'risa number one and b'risa number two. B'risa number one is describing the b'risa number one that says that you are not allowed to salt. So that's talking about where you're doing it in clusters of two. Once you salt in clusters of two, now it's going to be koveya, and therefore it's tevel, and therefore you can't eat it. In b'risa number two, where it says that you can salt, that's talking about one at a time. Okay. Adkan. Tana Rabbanan and the Gemara now is going to continue on the very bottom of Peitas Amud Beis, turning to today's daf. The Gemara quotes a Brisa, and we in this Brisa are going to go back to the Isser in the Torah, O lo sachtsam shor bedisho. You're not allowed to muzzle a ox when it is threshing in the threshing floor. So the idea of threshing is that you basically want to separate the kernel from the chaff. You're going to do so by applying pressure. And what you're going to do is you're going to have the animal basically run over the grains on the floor and provide the necessary pressure. Right, they would hitch some sort of apparatus to the back of the animal. I've seen pictures where people stand on the top of the apparatus. But anyway, but the animal is going to be there providing the horsepower, literally, or in this case, I should say the ox power, in order to apply the necessary pressure in separating the chaff from the grain. The Torah says, don't muzzle the animal. Allow the animal to take a little bit of the barley as the animal is threshing. So this is an isser in the Torah, and the Gemara now is going to be discussing the following. Tana Rabbanan. Paros ha mirkasos bitfua. So you have these animals, and they are threshing with grain. Take a look at the bottom Rashi over here. Rashi explains, "Amerkasos betvua shesharin saorim b'mayim umiyavshin osa betanor." So it is the barley is soaked in water and then dried in an oven. V'dashin osam beparos laasir klipasam v'hu chushla. Okay, so good. So you have the basic process in which we are threshing. V'hadashos betruma umayser. And in the case where your dash trumas and maitzos ain't over mishum batachsom. So in these cases, you're not going to be in violation of lo sachsom. Okay. Why not? You know, why will you not be in violation of lo sachsom? So, and the reason why you're not going to be in violation of lo sachsom is because at this point in time, they are finished products. Meaning the grain over here is reached the point of Gemar Malacha, and so therefore it's going to be considered Tevel. The only Isser in the Torah of Lo Sachsom Shor B'disho is when you're at the point of, when you have not yet reached the point of Gemar Malacha, then and only then there would be a prohibition. And so therefore what the Bryce is teaching us is that if we are post Gemar Malacha, so then you are allowed to muzzle your animal. Or if what your animal is threshing is Truma Meiser, so then the animal is not allowed to eat it. And therefore, there too, there is no prohibition of Chasima. You are allowed to muzzle your animals in such a situation. However, imagine your neighbors are watching you threshing. And they see that you're muzzling your animal. Now, they're not getting a good look of what you're doing. So they don't see that either A, the grain is already at the point of the finished product, or B, what the grain is trumas and maizos. And so they're just going to assume you're violating the Torah. And therefore, you're in violation of the inyan, of the idea of marasayan. So what should you do? So what you should do over there is, so you should bring some sort of, like a fistful of whatever you are, whatever you're threshing, and you should hang it betrasklan shebepia, and you should hang it by the mouth of the animal. So basically, to tell people that this is what I'm threshing, and this is not going to be a violation of, and I'm not violating the Torah. Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai omer mevi karshinim v'tolah she'a karshinim yafos l'menakol. Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai says, yes, you know what? You should basically put some sort of feed in the mouth of the animal, so that the animal will not bend down and the animal will not take. But specifically, you should give him karshinim. Karshinim is a very good quality feed for the animal, and Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai says, then that is what you should be doing in terms of giving it to the animal. So he's not arguing with the Tanakama. He's just simply saying that you should give something of a better quality. Okay, so what we just learned together is that in a scenario where you are threshing either grain that is finished or trumas and maizos, so under those circumstances, me'ikar din, you're allowed to muzzle your animal. There's just simply a marasayan consideration. Uremenu, the Gemara points out another brisa parsa, marakasos betua, ain't over mishum bal tachsam, va'adashu betruma maizor, over mishum bal tachsam. So, once again, this brisa over here starts off the same way the previous brisa did, that if we are threshing grain that is finished, and is tevel, and is chayv and trumas and maizor, so therefore you are allowed to muzzle your animal. However, this brisa says that when it comes to Trumas HaMaisros, you will be in violation of Lo Sachsom, which means that you're not allowed to muzzle your animal. And then the Brisa continues, or concludes, V'nachri Adash B'Parasos Yisrael Eino Over Mishum Bal Tachsom. V'Yisrael Adash B'Parasos Nachri Over Mishum Bal Tachsom. And then the Brisa concludes that this is an Isser Gavra, not an Isser on the animal. Meaning that if a non Jew were to take your animal and use your animal, so then he could muzzle it, because you're not muzzling it, he's muzzling it. And if you take the animal of a non-Jew, so then you're not allowed to muzzle it, because you're making use out of it, and therefore the issue is on you, not on the animal. Anyway, what we have over here is the steer between Brisa number one and Brisa number two, and that is in the threshing of Trumos and Maestros. In Brisa number one, the Brisa said, there is no issue of muzzling your animal when threshing Trumos and Maestros. In Brisa number two, it says that there is an issue of of muzzling your animal when threshing Trumos and Maestros. So we have what's called a stira. So kasha truma truma kasha meiser a meiser. So the Gemara says that we have what's called the stira. Bishlam truma truma lo kasha kam v'trumas kam begidulei truma. So the Gemara says, and here's what we could do. I can easily resolve the distinction between the brises as it relates to truma. One's talking about bona fide truma, the other one's talking about the growth of truma. Let's explain this a little bit better. Okay, truma itself, that's obvious. When I have grain, so I take off 2% and I give it to the Kohen, and that's called truma. Truma can only be eaten by the Kohanim. Truma cannot be eaten by the animals of the Kohanim. There is an iser for the animals to eat the truma. So therefore, you muzzle the animal when you're threshing the wheat of truma. Fine. And that's brisa number one. Brisa number two is talking about the growth of truma. What does that mean? It means you took truma and you planted it in the ground and it grew again. Normally, how does halacha look at anything planted in the ground? It looks at it as if it totally decomposes, and whatever grows anew is totally new. It's a new entity. And so, generally speaking, the halacha views anything planted as a new entity. So if I took truma seeds and I put them in the ground, so the growth is not truma. And that's going to be almost always true. By truma, by meiser, by anything you plant in the ground. However, when it comes to truma, the Chachamim made a takana, they made a gzera. And they said that the growth of truma rabbinically is going to have the status of truma. Why did the Chachamim make such a takana, a gzera? So I'll point to you to Rashi. So Rashi says, Gidule truma, Divra Maskal Gidule truma, Shezar v'gidla ha-gidulam truma midrabanan. So you take the seeds of truma, you plant in the ground, and that which grows is truma midrabanan. First of all, Rashi says, you want a little history on this gzera? So you know that this is one of the Yud Ches Davar. It's one of the 18 things where Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel disagreed. Normally we fall like Beit Hillel, not like Beit Shammai. On 18 gzeros, so there was a vote where we follow like Beit Shammai. This is one of the 18. V'kevin delav truma midaraisa hi karina bei deisha stama. Now, it's not truma min haTorah. It's only truma midrabanan. So therefore, in terms of describing it, we will describe it as a regular disha. Therefore, you are not allowed to muzzle the animals when it is working this kind of truma. Okay, I promised you that we're going to see why the Chachamim made such a gzera. It's not in this Rashi, it's a Rashi coming up later on. I'll come back to that Rashi a little bit later on. Okay, so let's go back to the Gemara. So the Gemara says like this. Okay, so as it relates to truma, now I get it. When am I going to be muzzling my animal during threshing? When he's threshing actual truma. When am I not allowed to muzzle my animal? When he is threshing growth of truma, which, as we just learned together, is not bona fide truma. It's only truma midrabanan. Therefore, the Chachamim, even though the Chachamim said we're going to have to treat like truma, vis-a-vis the animal can thresh, and you're not allowed to muzzle the animal. Okay. Maiser, maiser. So the Gemara says, I'm sorry, Bisham, truma, truma, lo kasha. I read that, kam, truma, kam, begidule, truma. Ella, let's go now, continue in the Gemara. Maiser, maiser, kasha. But I'll tell you where the difficulty lies. It lies in the steer between maiser and maiser. So So the Gemara says, and maybe we'll try to make the same distinction we made regarding truma. Gemara says, but it's not true. It's just simply factually not true. The growth of maiser is nothing. It's new. It doesn't have the status of maiser. Only the growth of Truma the rabbis enacted. The rabbis did not enact it regarding the growth of Meiser. Did not. Gedulei Tevel, Gedulei Meiser, Sheni Chulin. The growth of Tevel, the growth of Meiser Sheni is in fact Chulin. It, meaning it's simply not a Takana. It's not a Gzera. Now I'll turn to Rashi. Now we'll see the Rashi inside. Gedulei Tevel, Rashi writes, Tvusha Nimrcha Bikri, Vizar Bitvila, Harehi Kishar Chulin. Anything outside of Truma that's planted in the ground, when it grows, its status is back to zero. And therefore, of course, you're allowed to eat it in snacks only up to the point of miruch until the gemar malacha. And now Rashi writes, the kaven de zaro kala batole isura. Because what happens when you plant the seed in the ground? It degenerates, it decomposes, something new grows, so therefore whatever it was historically is erased, it's expunged, and now you're dealing with a new entity. Now, uva truma, so why don't we say the same thing regarding truma? So who did gazor kidim afarish asam? Gzera. So that is, in other words, right, the halacha would fundamentally treat it the same, but the rabbis made it gzera. Why did they do that? So Rashi over here provides two explanations that's given in the Gemara. Mishum truma tohora biyad Yisrael, shema Yisraenu lipater shelo yinenu lekohen. So first of all, so we are worried that maybe what an unscrupulous person may do is he may take the truma, plant it in the ground instead of giving it to the kohen, and basically it'll save himself from having to give to the kohen. Now, for this first reason, why aren't we worried the same thing about Meiser? Why aren't we worried about the same thing, right? To be honest with you, I'm a little bit unclear why this is only concern regarding Truma. Inami, but the second reason for sure is Truma specific. See, Inami, Mishum Truma Tameya, Biyad Kohen. What may end up happening is that the Kohen will receive Truma, and then, however it becomes Tameh, it becomes Tameh. Truma Tameya. And now what can the Kohen do with it? Not really a whole lot. He can use it for fuel, but that's only good if it's like olive oil. So the Gemara says, Dilma, Mashi Le Lazara Vasi Bali De Takala. So Kohen comes up with a great idea. Plant it in the ground. It'll grow anew. And I'll be fine. The Chachamim will worry that by the time he gets around to planting it, so by accident he would have eaten it, and in general, we'll see this time and again, the Chachamim will do a number of takanas in order to make sure it doesn't stay in the hands of the Kohen. Okay, fine. So, the Gzera of Gedulei Truma is only for Gedulei Truma, not for Gedulei Meiser. So the Gemara says, El Alokashia, so now we have to go back. So again, when your animal is threshing Meiser, Brisa number one says you're allowed to muzzle it. Brisa number two says you're not allowed to muzzle it. And so, how do you explain the discrepancy? So again, by Truma, no problem. Brisa number one was talking about actual Truma. Brisa number two was talking about Gidule Truma. Good. What about Meiser? So now the Gemara is going to give an answer. Elo Kasha, Abba Meiser Rishon, Abba Meiser Sheni. So the Gemara says that we can make a distinction between Meiser Rishon and Meiser Sheni. The Gemara says, V'ibai Seima, Hava Abba Meiser Sheni. Or we could say that both are talking about Meiser Sheni, Velo Kasha, Ha Rebbe Meir, Rabbi Yehuda. So the Gemara says, Ha Rebbe Meir, Damar Meiser, Mamon Gavohu, Ha Rebbe Yehuda, Damar Meiser Sheni, Mamon Hejot Hu. So the Gemara says, great. So what we could suggest is that the difference between the two prices is whether or not it is considered Mamon Gavoa or is it Mamon Hejot? Whose money is it? Rashi explains, if it's Mamon Gavoa, so then there would be no problem with muzzling your animal. You'd be allowed to muzzle your animal. Why? Because the Torah says, Lo sach som shur bidisho. When you are threshing your wheat, so you're not allowed to muzzle the animal. But if you're threshing the wheat that belongs to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, then you are allowed to muzzle the animal. So that would be Brisa number one that says that you're allowed to muzzle. Brisa number two subscribes to Rav Yehuda, who says that Meiser Sheni belongs to you, and therefore it's Disho, and therefore you're not allowed to muzzle the animal. Okay, here. Now we can ask a simple question, which really, quite frankly, we could have asked at the beginning of this entire sugya. Okay, but now we're asking it. And that is as follows. We are talking about threshing, which means now that we are at a really early stage. The chaff and the kernel are not yet been separated. So it has not been stockpiled. We basically threw it onto the floor and the animal is threshing. How can we possibly be having a discussion of trumos and maestros? How... Trumas HaMaisis is only after the Gemara Malacha. Hechi Dami Kigon, so the Gemara's question now is really simple. How do we get to the point of Maiser if we are threshing? So the Gemara says, Kigon Sheik Dima Bishi Balin. So the Gemara says, okay, I'll tell you how it happened. It happened because what the owner of the produce did is that he took off Trumas HaMaisis while it was still in the kernel. Quite frankly, it's too early to do so, but at the same time, the halacha also recognizes that if it's done, it's considered now Trumas HaMaisis. Okay, so you shouldn't do it that early, but the halacha also accepts the fact if you did. Ula Rav Yehuda v'habai choma. So the Gemara says, now according to Rav Yehuda, let's also consider the following. Remember, we said that according to Rav Yehuda, that's brisa number two. That says that you are not allowed to muzzle the animal because Maaser Sheni is yours. It's mamon hedyot. So the Gemara says, but wait one second. You're only allowed to eat the Maaser Sheni in Yerushalayim. Granted, it's yours, but your heter achila is only in Yerushalayim. So how can you allow your animal to go ahead and to thresh the Maaser Sheni unmuzzled when there's no heter achila to eat it? Answers the Gemara, Kagon she dash lifni mechomas beis pagi. So the Gemara says, okay, so we'll have to say that the brisa number two is talking about where you're somewhere within the perimeter of Yerushalayim. Beis pagi, Rashi explains, is in the next portion of Yerushalayim. But anyway, the basic idea is that you're somewhere within the walls, the perimeter of Yerushalayim, and therefore you can let your animal thresh it unmuzzled. Ibai Themalo Kasha. The Gemara says, or maybe we can go back and we can answer the question in the following manner. Meaning, again, we have two brises. One brisa says that when your animal is threshing Trumas HaMaisis, you must muzzle your animal. The brisa number two says you can leave your animal unmuzzled. So, in terms of Truma, we already made a distinction between Truma versus Gedulei Truma. And the Gemara says, and that really never bothered us. But Maaser, how do you understand the discrepancy? So we've now given a couple of answers. One Bryce is talking about Maaser Rishon, the other one's talking about Maaser Sheni. Both Bryces are talking about Maaser Sheni, one subscribing to Rav Meir, and the other one subscribing to Rav Yehuda in terms of who is the owner of the Maaser Sheni. The Gemara now is going to propose a third answer. The Gemara says, Ibai Samalo Kasha Kam Maaser Vadai, Kan Be Maaser Demai. So the Gemara says, maybe the distinction we can make is between bona fide Maaser versus Maaser that was taken off only because it was purchased from an Am Haaretz. Maaser purchased from an Am Haaretz, or any produce purchased from an Am Haaretz, really, the chances are the Am Haaretz took off Trumas HaMaisos, but as they chomer the Rabbanim, we are to take off Trumas HaMaisos again. So, but reality, of course, is based on halacha, but even the halacha acknowledges that this is not really Maaser, it's just Maaser as a result of a chomer de Rabbanan. So therefore, if your animal were to be threshing such Maaser, so can you leave your animal unmuzzled? Yeah, because even the halacha acknowledges that it's not bona fide Maaser. So the Gemara says, Hasha das achi truma truma nam lo kasha, kam truma vade, kam truma demai. So the Gemara says, okay, you know what? That was such a good answer. You know, you can apply that answer back to the truma as well. Meaning the discrepancy between the two brisas. One brisa is saying that you must muzzle your animal when threshing truma, and the other brisa is saying, no, you don't. You leave your animal unmuzzled. And now, previously we said one brisa was truma, the other brisa was gedulei truma. Now the Gemara is saying, I have another answer. One's talking about truma vadai, and the other one's talking about truma demai. The Gemara says, no, that's not going to work. Bishlam ha-maisa demai ika, ela trumas demai mi'ika. The Gemara says, there's no such thing as trumas demai. Trumas demai is not a thing. The Gemara goes on to explain, why is it not a thing? V'atanya will under Breisa. Afu bito sevidui. One of the institutions of Yochanan Kohen Gadol, okay, so Hanukkah is the right time to talk about him. So one of the institutions of Yochanan Kohen Gadol is that, first of all, he was mavatal vidui. There's no longer a mitzvah to do vidua meiser at the end of the third and sixth year of the Shemitah cycle. So we have to make a declaration. Biartis HaKodesh Min HaBayis, right? I did all my taxes. I did it correctly. And there's a mitzvah to make such a vidui. So, sometime during Bai Sheni, so Yochanan Kohen Gadol said, we're not doing it anymore. Why not? Rashi explains. So here, just a little historical notation. During the Second Temple, the Levim did not come back to Israel together with Ezra.
Not all.
Some did, most didn't. So, and Ezra was, to say the least, upset. And as a kenas, as a penalty, he basically stripped the Levium the right of their receiving of Meiser, and he gave it to the Kohanim. Right? He directed the allocation to the Kohanim. And truth be told, Kohanim are really Levium. I mean, you know, best kept secret in halacha. Yeah. So he stripped it away from the Levium. So now during Vidui, it's just not a correct statement. You can't say Gam Nasati LeLevi. I gave the Meiser to the Levi because you didn't. Now, granted, you didn't because Ezra told you not to. But okay, but you can't do the Vidui. Similarly, I'm not similarly. Sorry. Additionally, back to the Gemara, Gazar al Hadamai. Also, Exeru was made on Demai, meaning that when you purchase produce from an Am Haaretz, you must take off Maestros again. Lefi sheshalach b'chol gvul Yisrael, because they did a survey, and what did they discover? Verash alayim afrishan el trim gadola b'lvad. The only thing that was taken off consistently by everybody is trim gadola. But in terms of Maestration, 10%, that's a lot. I have to take off 10% and give it to the Levi? So people skimped on that 10%. So therefore, there was an enactment made. It's called, the enactment is called Demai. This is the history behind Demai. But you see, though, that even Demai from its inception was only on the Meiser, not on the Truma. So the Gemara says, so now, we say it all the time throughout Shas, this Gemara over here gives us a little bit of the history. Truma's Demai is not a thing. There was never such an institution that you have to take off Truma Gedola. What you need to take off is only the Meisers, Meiser Rishon, Meiser Sheni, but you don't have to take off Truma Gedola. So, Elalo Kasha, Kam Truma Meiser, Vadai Kam Truma's Meiser Demai. So the Gemara says, okay, you're right, Truma Gedola is not a thing, but you know what is a thing? Truma's Meiser. Meaning after giving the 10% over to the Levi, then you have to take 10% of that and give it to the Kohen. On that, there is also Truma's Meiser of Demai. Again, the idea when you buy from an Am Haaretz, did he take off Meiser? Probably. But you have to take off Meiser again. And when you take off Meiser again, what you have to do is you have to take off Meiser Mena Meiser, 10% of the 10%. And that is Trumas Meiser of Demai. That is a thing, and then that could be the distinction between Brisa number one and Brisa number two. In Brisa number one, we said that you are supposed to muzzle your animal. That's if dealing with actual Trumas Meiser. In Brisa number two, it says you can leave your animal unmuzzled. That's talking about Trumas Meiser of Demai. Okay. Bamine Merav Sheshes. Haisa ocheles umatrezes mahu. Let's say your animal is threshing. While your animal is threshing, the animal is having terrible control of its bowel movements, and the animal is just running. Okay, for forgiveness for the indelicacy, but the animal is just simply running.
Shouldn't be eating.
Okay, so and now as the animal is, it's clear that the runs that the animal has is really a result of the food that it's eating. And again, just as another, you know, side note, I can't imagine how, you know, how pleasant it is to think about the food for us to eat as well. Okay, but again, neither here nor there. So now, at this point in time, let's muzzle the animal. Okay, because right now it's not good for it. So, and the Gemara now, it's interesting, the Gemara now gets the Tamei Akra. Why are we not allowed to muzzle the animal? So mahu mishum de malelahu v'halo malela is the reason why the Torah prohibits us from muzzling the animal, is because eating is good for the animal, but in this case it's not good for the animal. Odemo de chazim mitzara, or maybe no, maybe it has nothing to do with the actual eating of the food, but it has to do with the distress that the animal is suffering. What we would call in halacha sar balechayim. So maybe over here this is a function of sar balechayim v'hachazid de mitzara, and you see that the animal is suffering as the animal is looking at the food, working with the food, but can't eat the food. So basically, over here, can I muzzle the animal? And what's behind the Isser in the Torah of Lo Sach from Shur B'Dishur? Amar Luhu Rav Sheshes Tanisua. Rav Shemem Yochai Amar Mevi Karshinim V'Tol Lala Sher Karshinim Yafos Lamin Akol. So the Gemara says we're going to go back to the Brice we saw in the very beginning of this morning's Shir on the top of the Amud. Remember, we talked about under certain circumstances, you are to muzzle your animal. You're allowed to. Problem, of course, is marasayin. So what do? When you muzzle the animal, put a little bit of feed in the muzzle so the animal has what to eat. Rav Shimon Bar Yochai says, and you know what you're going to put in the feed of the muzzle? You'll put in the best food for the animal. So shmamina mishum demalilahu shmamina. So you see that this idea of muzzling the animal or not muzzling the animal is all a function of what's good for the animal. And if this is currently not good for the animal, so then you are allowed to muzzle the animal. Can I ask a non-Jew to muzzle my animal for me? And here comes a really interesting discussion in the Gemara, and that is Amir La'akum. Now, Amir La'akum, I'll tell you what's interesting. I normally would have said, without today's daf, that Amir La'akum is a Shabbos idea. That on Shabbos, I'm not allowed to ask a non-Jew to do malacha for me. For a host of reasons, right? There are, in the brought down amongst the Rishonim, three reasons overall in terms of why I'm not allowed to ask a non-Jew to do work for me on Shabbos. One, it's shlichus. It's, you know, I'm basically, he's acting as my agent. So it's really me doing it. I'm just, you know, via agency. I know, ain't shlech l'dvar vera, but okay. But that's one reason. A second reason is because it's a lack of covered Shabbos, meaning Shabbos, we have to honor the Shabbos, and by me, even though I'm not doing the malacha myself, but I'm asking a non-Jew to do it for me, it's an affront to Shabbos, so that is covered Shabbos. And there's a third, okay, and it will come to me. It may not come
you
to me right...
Yourself.
Huh?
You may...
Oh, okay, fine. Exer, you may end up doing it yourself. Thank you. Okay, excellent. So those are the three basic reasons. And normally, the way we normally think, I'll speak for myself, the way I normally think is that Amir La'akum is a Shabbos idea. What this Gemara now is entertaining is the idea that Amir La'akum may not be limited to Shabbos. It may be a more universal idea that applies to all halacha. That I can't ask a non-Jew to do something that I myself am not allowed to do outside of the realm of Shabbos. Okay. Now, the Gemara is entertaining it. It's you'll see from the Gemara's conclusion, it's not clear whether the Gemara accepts this idea or not. For sure, by Shabbos, it's a thing. Now, Amir La'akum is a thing. But by other Averis in the Torah, other Yisroel in the Torah, may or may not be. Let's see the examples of Gemara over here treats us to. Number one, Ibailu Maoshi Omar Domla Nachrichasam Parasi Vidoshba. Mi Aminan Amir Lanachrishvus Animilin Shabbos. I might have thought that Amir Lakum only applies vis a vis Shabbos. Disra Skila, Shabbos is really serious. It's a capital crime. Ava Chasima di Isra Lav, lo. But when it comes to muzzling an animal, that's a lav in the Torah. Obviously a prohibition, but not at the scale of Shabbos. Or maybe there's no difference. The Gemara says Tashma. The Gemara says, well, let's consider the following. So the non-Jew who uses the animal of a Jew is not in violation of Baal Tachsom. Now, Eino Over gives us what kind of indication? The Gemara tries to make the following diuk. Me'avir delo avar ha'isuri ikar. He's not formally violating the Isser in the Torah. It's not the Avera of Lo Sachsom, but there's still an Isser involved. Meaning, no Malkus, but it's still prohibited. That's the diuk that the Gemara would like to try to make. The Gemara says, it's not a compelling diuk. Bidinu di Isser na Meleka. No, the truth of the matter is, it's totally fine. And the only reason why the Brice is using language like Over Avera is I did the Tana Sefer Yisrael Adash Bepar Social Nachri Over Tana Reisha Eino Over only because of the symmetry and the parallelism between the first and second half of the Brisa. In the second half of the Brisa, it says that if a Jew uses an animal of a non-Jew, he is violating the Isra in the Torah of Lo Sachsom Shor Bidisho, even though it's not his animal. So on the foil on the other side of the Brisa is the idea that when the non-Jew uses your animal, there is no Isra, but We can't use the word iser. We use the word avera, so we just want to complement and use the same word. But the truth of the matter is, there's no iser whatsoever. Tashma. The Gemara says, well, why don't we consider the following? And that is, shachul elavu d'shmuel. They sent the following question to the father of Shmuel for him to answer. Halen ture. You see, we have our animals. Did nignavan armayu menachin yason. What happens is that you have non-Jews steal these animals, castrate the animals, and give them back to us. Rashi points out over here, all this was by design. Meaning, I'll put this in air quotes, they stole the animal. Meaning that we knew that they were going to take it. And we knew that they were going to castrate the animal. We are not allowed to castrate the animal. It's an issue in the Torah. And then what they did is they returned the animal to us after having castrated the animals, and all this was done with a wink and an understanding. Actually, if you look at the very bottom Tosfos over here, he quotes in the name of the Sheoltos, one of the Gaonim. So the Rav Achai, to be specific, he says that actually the way Rav Achai describes it, you put like a little money on the animal. So that it might, right, it's an incentive for the guy to steal the animal, castrate the animal, and give it back to you. And the obvious question: why are we doing all this? Why is it so good that they castrate the animal? So Rashi points out over here: the animal is better at plowing, less testosterone, right? Less wildness, right? It calms the animal down. The animal now will be better at plowing. So here's the story: we are not allowed to castrate the animal. That's an issue in the Torah. The non-Jew, presumably, is allowed to castrate the animal, so therefore, let him do something that we can't do. Okay, this is our discussion. Samir la'akum. So,
it's
the act of castration which is prohibited. So he's doing an action that we're not allowed to do. So the Gemara says, Shachlehu harami David behu. So a father of Shmuel did not like this. He says, you are circumventing the law. I don't like this. Arimo alayu v'yizdavdun. And he says, I'm telling you that anyone who is involved in this kind of activity must sell the animal as a knas, as a penalty. You're not allowed to do that. So
not to a Jew.
We'll discuss that in just a moment. So the Gemara says, Amara Papa, B'nei Ma'arava, Savila Karev Chidka. So Rav Papa says, no. You know what? We don't understand the dynamics of this question and answer. We think that this was an issue in Amir La'akum. The Gemara is saying, no, that's not the dynamics. The Gemara says, Amara B'nei Nochman Suvan Al-Sirus. So the author of this question and the author of the answer were all subject to the following opinion, which is that castration is not just a halacha that applies to Jew, it's a halacha that applies to non-Jew as well. It's a universal law. It's one of Sheva Mitzvahs B'nei Noach. Now I know that if it's one of Sheva Mitzvahs B'nei Noach, and that's no longer seven, it's more than seven, but don't be fooled by the number. The number seven is not an absolute. And there is an opinion in the Gemara Sanhedrin that says that the iser of Sheva Mitzvahs B'nei Noach include in it sirus, castration. So the Gemara says, V'kavri mishum lifnei yivar lo sitei michshol. And so now, I'll tell you what really the issue is. The issue is not Amir La'akum. The issue is, they're not allowed to do it. By you allowing them to take your animal, castrating the animal, and according to the Sheiltos, even paying them to do so. So all that is a violation of Lifnei Iver. We know that Lifnei Iver applies to Jew and non-Jew alike. One of the most classic examples of Lifnei Iver is giving them a piece of Aver Menachai. Right? Whenever the Gemara goes over Lifnei Iver, it's sending Aver Menachai to a non-Jew. He's not allowed to eat it. Here too, according to this opinion, he's not allowed to castrate the animal. So suffer, I'm sorry, period. So that's really the dynamics of the question. And so if you understand it that way, it's not an Amir La'akum issue. It's an issue of B'nei Noach and Lifnei Iver. So the Gemara says, suffer, of L'mei Marim Kru L'shchita. So now, in terms of the Knas of Avua de Shmuel, sell it. Sell it for what end? So we think that means you have to sell it in order so that it be shechted. Now that's not great because there you're not selling it at such a high price. Meaning once you're selling it for end use, so that's it. It's a one-time deal. So the Gemara says, "Amalei Abaye Dayan Shekanasa Alayo Mechira." So the Gemara says, "No. When we're talking about selling it, we're talking about selling it for the purposes of just sale. Meaning that it no longer is in your hands. That the kanas is that you can't profit from the plowing. So you give it to somebody else. You sell it to somebody else. But even for the plowing, okay. Let's just do a couple more lines." Pshita, the Gemara says, Benogadol ki acher dami. Who do you sell it to? So you can sell it to an adult child because, assuming that he's not, he's his own person, he's an independent, so you sell it to an adult child. Benogadol mai? What about selling it to a minor? Right, we had this recently in the Gemara, where basically a person wanted to shelter his property, so he sold it to his minor son. So over here, similar idea, it's a kanas, you need to sell it. Can you satisfy the kanas by selling it to your minor son? So Rav Achi Asa, Rav Ashi Shari, so it's a debate amongst the Amarayim. Mereimar Marzuch Ravamilu Hanu Tre Chasidai Machalfe Ahadade. And the Gemara concludes by saying that you have two Amarayim, or two Chasidim, unnamed Amarayim, who, when violating this prohibition of allowing the non-Jew coming castrating your animal, so what they would then do is they would then exchange it to one another. Now, it sounds a little bit fishy.
That's more hurt.
Okay.
More to say.
Yeah. So it sounds a little bit fishy. So basically, they circumvented the castration law, and then in order to satisfy the kanas, they just simply handed it to one another. Like in the good old days, in the older generations, when they would pay each other's tuitions. In other words, it's not scrupulous. It's not right. So Tosfos over here points out, Rashi doesn't comment on this, but Tosfos over here points out that, I'll read the Tosos, and we'll end over here. The Mechalfe Hadade, Shalom Idatan HaYimisar Senosan, it was castrated, but not with their consent, unlike in the previous cases, where basically it was a wink to the non-Jew to castrate. Omi koma koma yumachlif in Shema lo ya'aminu ha'olam shayah Shalom Idatan. So therefore, as an extra layer of ethical behavior, they didn't ask the non-Jews to do it for them, but at the same time, their animals were castrated, so as an extra layer, so they ended up swapping one another. Or just so that people would not say that this was in fact done by a non-Jew, but Tosfos is of the opinion that in this particular scenario, it was not done with the consent of the Jew. Unlike in the previous cases. Okay. Either way, let's just quickly wrap it up. Let's summarize, and we'll pick it up tomorrow. We discussed today, once again, more on the topic of eating fruit. We try to conclude about whether or not you're allowed to roast the fruit. The Gemara did not have a conclusion. We talked about two koveyas that will make the fruit chayv and shumas and maestros. One, gathering it together and salting. Two, mekach. Okay, so those are two considerations in terms of when being kovei of the fruit, so it's chayv and shumas amaisos mid rabbanon. Spent a lot of time talking today about muzzling your animal. Two brises, one saying you're allowed to muzzle your animal when it comes to shumas amaisos, when he's threshing shumas amaisos. Another brise is saying you're not allowed to muzzle your animal. The Gemara spent a lot of time trying to resolve the discrepancy between those two brises. Then we discussed what is the purpose of the Torah of Lo Sachsam Shor Bedisho. Is it a Tzar Baal HaChaim issue, or is it just simply a pragmatic, your animal, the food is good for your animal? The Gemara sided with the more pragmatic position of it's good for your animal, which means that if it's not good for your animal, if the animal has the runs and the eating is exacerbating the problem, so the Gemara says you're allowed to muzzle your animal under such circumstances. And then finally, what we concluded with today is the question of Amir La'akam as it applies to other Yisurim in the Torah. Is there an idea of Amir La'akam as it applies to other Yisurim in the Torah? The Gemara entertained this idea by Lo Sachsam Shor Bedisho and about the Yisur of castration of the animal. Is there a prohibition to allow a non-Jew to do that which you cannot do yourself? The Gemara entertained the idea. The Gemara left the issue inconclusive.